a wide array of name brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge, who has a couple days off here, and very glad you are listening. Henry Frayne is at the controls, and our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. During this hour, Focus 580, we'll talk about children's health, something we do once a month on Focus 580 with Dr. Robert Bocek. He is a pediatrician and a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, and it has been our great pleasure to have him with us once a month on this show for some time now to talk about children's health issues and to answer your questions. That's what this show is all about. We can't do diagnoses over the telephone, over the radio, but we certainly are glad to help you out as much as we can in terms of general health issues and some general advice on things that are going on. And so if you would like to join our conversation, you can easily do so. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and call us around Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. Anywhere in the 217 area code, that's the number. If you're outside the 217 area code, use our toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Dr. Bocek, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be back again.
Always good to see you.
Thank you.
School's about to start. Actually is starting.
Yeah, some kids are in. Some kids are starting pretty soon. I guess university moves in this week.
Yeah.
And, yeah, recently I read a review article on school failure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's estimated that 10 to 15% of all kids are retained at least a year, which surprised me. I didn't know it was that high. And this article went on to talk about the negative effects of school retention on kids. It has negative health effects. These kids tend to, as teenagers, have more trouble with drug use, with delinquency, with behavior problems, with pregnancy, all kinds of things. They have a lot of depression, a lot of mental health problems. They have some physical health problems from these. I think the thing that surprised me is, well, a lot of them drop out of school. They never go on to graduate. And we certainly know, I think we've got plenty of data that that a high school diploma is much better than a GED and a college degree is much better than a high school diploma as far as economics is concerned. I wasn't aware that somebody who spends some time in college has about half the corrected death rate of somebody who drops out of school.
That's interesting.
It was a bit of a surprise to me. And I think it's because they're more likely to smoke and more likely to,
mm-hmm.
Get into trouble, risky behaviors. And so I think what I'm getting around to saying is preschool has been shown to be helpful. So I think, we need to prepare our kids for school. Once they're in school, we need to keep track of our kids. How are they doing in school? And it's not the last quarter of the school year. It's from day one. Keep track of how your kids are doing. Help them with their homework. Make sure they do their homework. Give them a quiet place to do their homework. Watch TV time or watch screen time. Watch TV time. Watch computer time. Watch Game Boy time. Not to say these things are bad, but
they become all-consuming.
Yes.
Right.
Follow up if your child's having problems. Stay in touch with the school. The name of the game seems to be not to have our kids retained, but to make sure they do well and that we stay in touch with the teacher and stay in touch with our children and make sure that they're successful in school.
Yeah. Well, and it's really difficult for a lot of parents who, may be working long hours or there's so many other complications in life to really focus and keep track of how their kids are doing. It almost seems like it takes a plan that you sit down and go, okay, here's how we're going to do this. We're going to make sure the homework is done every night and
we're going to make parent-teacher conferences and yeah.
Right.
We're going to do what we need to do to make sure that our kids are successful in school. And yeah, we're going to stay in touch with our pediatrician. We're going to stay in touch with the school. We are going to be advocates for our children to make sure they succeed. And we're going to read to our kids. We're going to set good examples to our kids. We're going to have books around the house, magazines around the house. We're going to read to ourselves. We're going to read to our kids. And we're going to do some educational things. We're going to keep the TV out of their bedrooms. We're going to keep a telephone out of their bedrooms. We're going to have dinner with them every night or breakfast with them every morning, and we're going to listen to our kids and see what kind of problems they're having.
Simple things.
Yes. But it does, yeah, like you say, it in our busy lives with both parents working, mm-hmm. it takes a little more effort than it used to.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, I know in our household, just finding a time to have dinner together, you know, is amazingly difficult.
Yes.
Because they're doing soccer, they're doing taekwondo, yeah. they're doing all this other stuff, and I'm doing things, and so is my wife. Yeah. So, it takes quite an effort to coordinate our schedules. And, you know, they're grade school kids, you know.
Yes.
Just wait till they're teenagers, my goodness. Yeah.
When your kids are teenagers, I used to like to say as a parent, your job of parenting is done at age 12. After then, it's a hold-on time. And in a way, that's true. But in a great way, it's certainly not true.
Yeah.
We still have parental obligations. And Jack and I were talking before the show, it's fun being a parent. It's fun watching these kids be a work in progress.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I think it's fun having these kids, as we help them grow, they help us grow too.
Amen to that. Well, on the preparation and helping kids do well in school, I think there's a lot of sort of angst about how the schools are performing these days. And, of course, we have No Child Left Behind and so forth, and all these efforts to hold schools accountable. And then you talk to the teachers and they say, we're working as hard as we can for, not a whole lot of, salary, et cetera. And they want the parents more involved. And there's this sort of, perhaps we're talking past each other sometimes. The parents say, the schools ought to be doing better. And the schools are saying, families got to do better,
And I think I will fault No Child Left Behind. I think it's a well-intentioned law. That probably is not doing what it was intended to do. And from what I understand, it's leaving some students behind. The money is being focused into the average child. The so-called gifted child is, the money's being taken out of there because mm-hmm. the general population has to pass the test. Do the tests measure what we want to measure? I don't know. Does it make sense to punish a school that fails the test? Or does this school need help as the failing student does? Does it need, what's going wrong?
Yeah.
Is it the student body? Is it the school that's failing? How can we, let's not punish this school. Let's help remediate this school somehow.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the individual failing child. What's going on and how can we help this child out? And I think the other thing, kids in school, 6 hours a day, 180 days out of the year, which is for half the year they're in school, a quarter of the time. For the other half of the year, they're not in school at all. So what does that come out to? Kids in school, 12% out of the year,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm.
So, there's a lot of time that we as parents and we as a community need to fill in this other 85% of the time.
Exactly, right. And
continue the educational practice. Yeah, we cannot expect the schools in 12% of a child's life make them successful. We have a right to have expectations from our educational system, but we need... Yeah, the child has expectations from us too, from us as a society and a community that we need to fill in our time.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about children's health issues, education, and upbringing and all these kinds of good things. If you would like to join the conversation, any questions you have are welcome. Dr. Robert Bocek is our guest. The phone number, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. You know, we're talking about television and Game Boys and Game Cubes and PS2s and there are a whole lot of game systems out there. How do you know if your kids are spending too much time with these things? I mean, a certain amount of it, I think there actually is an argument that a certain amount of it is certainly not unhealthy and perhaps in some ways educational, depending on what they're doing with these things and so forth.
But, you know, I think, yeah, there's no doubt it's got to improve hand-eye coordination and that sort of thing. Do you give them a half hour a day? Do you give them an hour a day? And I think, I can't give you a number. But I think, again, like you talked about earlier, if they become preoccupied with it and, hi, Mom, I'm having my stack, I'm going to my room to play Game Boy, and you don't see him again till supper time, I think. And right after supper, they gulp down supper as fast as they can, and they're back in their room playing Game Boy. I think we got a problem there, and I think as long as they're doing well in school, as long as, they're making time to play with friends, they're making time to be with family, I think, it's okay. But, I don't know. I can't give you X number of minutes per day per age, but I think you have to look at this child as a holistic element, and are they balancing out life? In this day and age where obesity is such a problem, are they getting out to play baseball, to run with their kid friends, taekwondo, whatever?
Ride their bicycles.
Yeah, ride their bicycles.
Play some sports and so
play
forth. Do some art.
Do some art.
Actual physical art with, paper and paint and so forth like that. A lot of issues we could talk about. One of the things, and actually this relates to what we've been discussing so far, it continues to amaze me how fast children mature, how fast they grow, and not just physically, but emotionally, mentally, intellectually, philosophically, and how they change before you realize that they have changed. And suddenly they're talking to you about things that just they sound like what my kid is asking me about, all these issues that my son was asking. Well, what happens if I grow up and I can't find the right, spouse, and what happens if I want to have kids, but, if my child is not healthy when he or she is born? And so he's starting to worry about these things. Okay. They have a sort of a greater range of understanding about the way his life is unfolding. And it struck me as just amazing because it happened. I mean, I'm not teaching him to think these. Yeah. Well, maybe I am teaching him to think these things without realizing it. But I'm amazed that he's growing in these, so broad at this point in his life.
I guess I'm sort of surprised too, Jack.
Yeah.
But I think, again, the school educates, we educate, the media out there.
Sure.
Television and movies are bringing up a lot of these things. And I think perhaps, and again, I think that's why as a parent you need to stay tuned to your kids. Listen to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them orders all the time. Don't talk to your kids all the time. Listen to them and find out what they are thinking. What's troubling them? What show they heard? And I think, I think as parents, many parents vow to never give the answer of I don't know or because.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes you're just stuck with that. You just, you can't do any better. And you just have to say, life has ups and downs in it, and you just don't quite know when the brick wall's going to come in front of you, so you just bounce off of it and you take another route.
Absolutely.
And I think it's fine to share that, it's fine to listen to your kids' doubts, and it's fine to share that as an adult, life isn't much different. You still have your own doubts and questions and answers that you don't have.
Yeah. Well, we talk about how, if they're bored or they're, they're into doing something and they don't want to stop and have dinner or something like that. And these challenges, it seem like such a crisis to them, and you have to say, look, this is really, you know, we're not asking you to, you know, cut off your arm here. We're asking you to come up, you know, for dinner or whatever. And you start to get into conversations about what's hard about being a kid and versus what's hard about being an adult. And, you know, they have such a different perception of your life than you do.
Yeah. I mean, they don't worry about mortgage payments and car payments.
Right. And you don't want to really make them worry about those things.
But they have, for age-related, they have just as significant a worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a fight with my best friend. Absolutely. That is a terrible trauma. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And, and again, I think the important thing is to listen. And I think that's why sharing a meal together is often not every day. I mean, I realize in our present society that's not possible, but as, you know, as often as possible, have dinner or take, I always used to like to take, when my kids were young, just take them one at a time out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we had an in-depth talk. Sometimes we just ate a hamburger together, but the opportunity was there to listen to them or just chit-chat and have fun.
Well, it must be August because we're not getting any phone calls so far.
And this happens, listening.
Well, I think there are a few people listening. And certainly if anyone listening would like to join our conversation, we invite you to do that. And we can talk about other topics as well, whatever is on your mind, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician and clinical assistant professor of the College of Medicine here at the University of Illinois. They like us to mention that, I'm sure. We're talking about children's health issues. And so if you'd like to join us, feel free to do so. I think we have a caller getting lined up now. Let me just follow up on the thing that you were just talking about, and then we'll go right to this caller. Family meals. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but it seems like something that we always struggle with, and that's getting our kids to eat healthy.
Yes. Don't worry about it.
I'd like to not worry about it.
I think I've been consistent about saying that. Yeah. I think our job seems to be as parents to offer a balanced diet and then trust them.
Okay.
And that they will consume a balanced diet. Again, you're not running a restaurant in your home. Although I think there's always the fail-safe of peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah. Right.
If you're serving liver and onions and Brussels sprouts, there's always the backup of peanut butter and jelly. But they will eat their vegetables, not daily.
Yeah.
They will consume enough protein, not daily. But over a week or longer period, they will balance their diet well. And, don't worry about it. And as a general rule, a healthy child does not need vitamin supplementation.
Right. Well, I may follow up on that, but we have a caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. Someone on line number one. Good morning.
Yes. Hello. I'm interested in hearing more about No Child Left Behind. Could you talk about some of its cons?
I think I'm probably not the expert on that, but I think, again, to me, testing all kids, I think we've got the bell-shaped curve, the Gaussian curve in children, too. Some are very bright and some are not so gifted. And to expect everybody to pass a test, I think, is unreasonable. And to punish a school where the kids are not passing this, in the first place, we got to make sure that the test tests what we need, what we want, that it is a valid test. And again, to me, punishing a school that doesn't cut the mustard doesn't make sense.
How are they punished? With withdrawal of funds?
They could. Well, kids are allowed to matriculate out of that school to another school, and they're rewarded. The schools are rewarded by how many heads are in that school that day. So the funds will be withdrawn too, is my understanding.
Right, that's right.
And so we've got failing schools. That it seems to me, what you do with a failing school is you invest more resources in it, whether it be money or educational talent, that you don't punish it. Because I think what the parents who care are going to pull their child out of that school, the parents who are less able, less interested, the single parent families, the poor, and that sort of stuff, are not going to be able to do anything about it. So I think what we're going to do by letting the kids that whose parents are interested go to transfer to another school is I think we're going to leave that school in sadder and sadder shape.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. You know, this is an interesting issue because, I mean, it's sort of a almost a philosophical issue in the sense that it sounds really great to say we're going to punish underperformance. We're going to get tough, you know, and demand accountability. And those are all phrases that, yeah, oh, great, that, we're going to do that, you know. But what are we really doing, I guess, is the question. Is it, I mean, who are we punishing? I mean, the school, the teachers, the principal,
And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
But we're punishing the kids.
Yeah.
The kids we're supposed to be educating. And I think No Child Left Behind. Wow, that sounds great. But I think we're leaving kids. Yeah, I don't think the law. I think it was well intentioned, but it doesn't deliver. Yeah, the outcome isn't what we. What we were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these so-called failing schools. Just as a failing student needs remediation, investigation. I think the failing school should be treated the same way. And probably what it means is putting more resources into it instead of less resources.
Yeah, but the counterargument seems to have been that if you do that, you're rewarding failure, there's like an incentive to fail because then you'll get more resources, as if that's the calculus that teachers and principals have when they're, trying to go about their daily business.
And there's bad doctors in the world. There's bad teachers in the world. There's bad principals in the world, but I think, for the most part, the teachers and the school administration is intending to do a good job and educate these kids. And if we do have bad teachers and a bad principal in this school, let's get rid of them. Let's replace them.
Mm-hmm.
So again, let's put more resources in there, more services from consultants, if you will. Or, if they really need more money, let's pour more money into this. Let's remediate the school so the kids don't have to, change schools, change friends, cause more transportation problems. Let's fix the school.
Well, you're talking about how parents can help, kids succeed in school. And I know a lot of teachers just would be delighted to have more parents show up at school events and maybe even volunteer in the classroom. They're always looking for parents to come do things in the class. I mean, that's for a lot of us, it's really hard because we have, day jobs and so forth.
Yeah.
But even, coming to open house and parent teacher conference and things like that.
Can you find an hour a day once a week?
Yeah.
To go read to a child who's behind or has a reading problem. I think we can do better.
Well, we have another caller getting lined up here. This is another listener on in Urbana on line number one. Good morning.
This whole No Child Left Behind thing assumes that it's just the schools that affect a student's performance in academically. I thought it was interesting to read that the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine put some resources into operating with the schools and some health program that they had. They found, for instance, that there were low-income kids who were missing a lot of school because of asthma, and they were having asthma problems because of poor housing conditions. So they actually hired lawyers to go after the landlords to fix the leaky, moldy apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It improved school performance. And because the kids
attendance
were healthier,
was up. Yeah.
The kids were healthier, and they attended school more frequently, and they got more out of school. And so in that, that's just one example where holding the schools accountable for the child's total learning environment is not exactly fair. And we're not, and we've pulled money away from housing and health care and all other kinds of things. Because, quote, we don't want to throw money at it.
And yeah, and unfortunately, Medicaid's in, it seems to be in a money crisis. So a lot, even in Champaign-Urbana, we're a wealthy, well-educated community. The poor have very limited access to health care services.
Well, there's a series in our local paper as well about the effects of the removal of the high-rise housing complexes in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and how that is causing downstate migration of people coming to downstate communities where affordable housing is more available, and because it's not available. It's totally overloaded in Chicago, and it's overloading everybody.
Yeah.
And we're not shifting resources downstate to take care of those people.
And unfortunately, I talked about the kids who fail in school, and unfortunately, they're more likely to come from single-parent families. They're more likely to be African-American, Hispanic students, people of color. And unfortunately, they're more likely to come from families who have a lower educational standard themselves.
Well, and the other thing is, I mentioned this on another phone call, is that a Champaign school board member mentioned to me that Illinois has no standards for or requirements for homeschoolers. And while I'm sure that there are plenty of parents who homeschool who do an excellent job, it can also be an excuse where, you know, the kid's not is playing truant, and the parent just says, okay, I'll homeschool them, and they don't actually do it. There was a graphic illustration of that on the program on WILL just a few nights ago. It was a late evening program about a neighborhood in Indianapolis and how the neighbors had found ways to better their neighborhood. And they showed a neighborhood where there are problems with people not keeping up their properties, and they interviewed several people, including one guy who's standing there in his T-shirt with, you know, the prototypical trashy sort of person. And there's his daughter standing there, and she said, well, I kind of dropped out of school and went the homeschooling route because I didn't like the schools. So just looking at the father, visually, the prejudice would be that guy isn't, just looking at the way he's keeping up his house, trash all over the place. He's not homeschooling his daughter. So we really need to be looking at the whole picture, not just what's going on in the schools. We have to be saying, what's going on in private schools? What's going on with homeschoolers as well? Thanks.
Okay.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think my general experience before I retired with the parents who homeschooled was very positive. I did have one unfortunate family where the child was borderline mentally disabled and wasn't picked up on for 2 or 3 years, and then finally went to the public schools. But for the most part, my experience was very good. That the parents were very dedicated to it, and most of these people got into a network of some kind, be it church affiliated, be it community affiliated. And most of these kids did very, very well. But, yeah, I think you're right. Some of these kids can slip through the cracks and yeah, we need to make sure. Well, we can't make sure. We need to do our best that they don't slip through the cracks.
Right. We're past our midpoint with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician, taking your questions on children's health issues, health and development, and we have plenty of time if you'd like to join the conversation. Questions and comments are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We had a question off the air, someone who didn't want to speak on the air but did want to ask this question, this is a listener who says, my daughter was diagnosed late in adolescence, age 18, with ADD, not ADHD, and has been taking Concerta with fairly good results. Do you have an opinion on the various medications available, Ritalin, Adderall, Strattera, et cetera, and their effectiveness as kids move from childhood to adulthood? And do you think the medication should be given along with therapy or standalone? That's a big question, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not sure I still understand attention deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. There is ADD. There is ADD. ADHD, or sometimes there isn't, sometimes there's not, depending what version of the DSM we're dealing with. But basically, the H stands for hyperactivity. And some kids have attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity, and they tend to be the squeaky wheels. They tend to get diagnosed earlier because they tend to be so disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
And the ADDs don't have the hyperactivity. It seems that boys tend to have the H more than the girls tend to have the H. And it's a disease or it's a condition that's being diagnosed more and more in adults. Yeah, there's a variety of medications. Most of them are of the stimulant class of drugs. And some work better for, and I think it's like any other drug, some work better for some people and some work better than others. So I don't have any, yeah, I think whichever one works best is the one you stick with. And to the best of my knowledge, I think these can be lifelong medications that have no long-term handicap.
Okay.
No long-term problem.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough to say that different people respond differently to different medications, and so you have to just figure that out on an individual case level. Is there a change in how people react over time as they move from childhood to adulthood? Do kids react to, you know, Ritalin different than adults?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. And I think what's happened over the last few years that's made these drugs so much easier, it's the long-acting forms.
Uh-huh.
You take one in the morning.
Yeah.
That's all you need. Instead of having to go to the nurse's office at noon to get in line with all the other kids on these medications and take your hyper drug at noon.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it and nobody, yeah, the rest of the classmates don't need to know, yeah, what you're doing.
Right.
It's none of their business.
The other part of the question is concerning therapy along with the medication.
I don't think that's generally necessary. I think it can be, well, yeah, if the medication does the job.
Yeah.
And they otherwise feel well and aren't showing any other signs of problems, I think psychotherapy is not important or is not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, yeah, kids with attention deficit disorder may have comorbid psychological condition, mental health conditions that need help. You know, if this child has struggled all along, maybe been retained in class, maybe a bit depressed, or maybe there's some other problems going on that psychotherapy could be helpful.
Well, you know, and it comes to mind that, you know, many of us, we go through life and we live in a, you know, middle class situation and so forth. We're really not aware of the trauma that many people go through and a lot of kids go through. And that's got to have a, you know, an impact on their behavior, yeah, their health, their ability to pay attention in class, you know, and then we say, well, let's give these kids drugs or, you know, there's something wrong with, you know, or we blame this. I mean, it's so hard to completely understand a child who isn't performing right, but we may not understand that they've gone through trauma.
Yes. Yeah, why isn't this child attending? Is it because they have attention deficit disorder, or is it because mom and dad just got divorced?
Mm-hmm.
The lady that called earlier about the Johns Hopkins study in asthma, how many days of school did these kids miss versus how many days of school did they attend, but they were having symptoms? They weren't feeling well. So they were physically in school, but they mentally weren't in school because they were worried about breathing. Or they're worried about home, or because a child isn't attending, maybe attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It may be maybe a multitude of other things, or maybe these kids have learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
They're working as hard as they can, but they don't learn the way most kids learn. They need special. Yeah, they need more involvement by the parents. They need more involvement by the school. They need special learning techniques brought in to help them out.
So here's the question. What role does the pediatrician, physician have in either perceiving what's going on or, you know, in the case of a routine checkup, you know, kid's going to have a checkup before the school year starts and so forth. I mean,
I think the role of the pediatrician is more of an advocacy role, talking to the parents about what you can do. Unfortunately, in this day and age, it's become more of a put this kid on Ritalin role. And I think physicians and parents, it's not that simple. I think attention deficit disorder is a terribly hard diagnosis to make. I think, yeah, there's many other conditions that can mimic it, as we've talked about. So I think our role as a pediatrician is to get together and talk with parents and say, okay, where are we at? What's been done? What's the school done? What have you done? What can I do? Where are we going to go from here? We're going to demand educational testing at the school. Does it sound most likely that this child, you know, I can do a hearing and vision test in the office to make sure your child sees okay. Right. It's important for them to see and hear okay. But those are probably normal. I can do a physical exam, but almost assuredly it's going to be normal. So I think the role of the pediatrician is to be, yeah, how is your kid doing? And I don't mean do they have a cough, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. How is your kid doing? Does your kid have friends? Is your kid doing well in school? Is your kid bringing home C's or better? And if the answer to any of those is no, all right, now we need to sit down and talk a little bit more. Where's the problem, and how do we remediate it?
Sounds good. Well, we have one caller waiting, and about 15 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580. We're talking with pediatrician Dr. Robert Bocek, talking about children's health issues. If you have questions or comments, you're welcome to join us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. An Urbana caller on line number one next. Good morning.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
This is actually more of a reference to my wife's, you could talk a lot about vaccinations and inoculations and warning people. Mm-hmm. And her boss is actually out of Chicago. And last year he became sort of ill for some, he just became very sick and he couldn't figure out why. And they sort of went through this labyrinthine test and he finally started the Mayo Clinic. And it turned out that he had been inoculated against the DPT shots, pertussis and all those, and whooping cough. And it turned out that his inoculation had worn off, but his daughter was exposed. Somebody in the school that she went to in Chicago had whooping cough, and he got it latently. He's like in his 40s, his late 40s, and it sort of went through him and done a job on him, and all because someone at that school did not have their child inoculated against that and spread it through the school. But I guess people that had been inoculated against it did not actually get it but passed it on. And I know Dr. Bocek is really on this, and I just thought I'd say that to the audience because some people just have this, like, aversion as if, like, you know, they're risking their children's but other people's health by not having their kids inoculated. But that's all I really had to say, but I just want to let you know that.
Yeah, it is, and I think we talked about this several times in the past, that the pertussis part of the DPT vaccine wears off after about 7 years. So the last booster dose is at age 5, hopefully.
So should adults get that later on then?
I'm glad you brought that up because very recently, several years ago, an acellular pertussis vaccine came out for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was to do was to reduce the reaction rate to the vaccine.
Oh, okay.
Recently, an acellular pertussis vaccine has been licensed and approved for teenagers. So it may be in the very near future that instead of getting our diphtheria tetanus booster every 10 years, we will get a diphtheria tetanus with an acellular pertussis component. So, yes, we as adults will not be susceptible to pertussis anymore because, again, pertussis, as I've said, has a mortality rate in the young children. It doesn't have a mortality rate basically in adults, but it's got a more – it's a long-lasting illness that, wipes you out for about six to 8 weeks.
He had to go to the Mayo Clinic, and they finally decided, this is what you have been exposed to. I mean, he has things like he works – he'll go out and he'll work for do anything labor, work in the house, and his temperature rises 2 degrees. He sweats on half of his body. I mean, really strange stuff. And I mean, it's
peculiar. Yeah, it's not the typical pertussis.
Yeah, I know. I guess an adult affects you differently. But I mean, he's not like, I don't know. It just seems like odd to me that, I mean, he took him, they had to go to the Mayo Clinic to find out what was wrong with him. But I just wanted to, you know, I know some people are like, you know, naturalists and all this stuff, and they say, oh, I'm not going to give my kid this stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. But I just want to let you know that. And I really appreciate all this work you've done, and I really enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot we're talking about benefit risk. Yeah, some kids are going to get high fever at the pertussis vaccine, but again, the vaccine, you know, we've got the acellular pertussis component in it, so that's much less. Some kids are going to, you know, the measles, mumps, and germ measles vaccine is a live viral vaccine. Yeah, we've gone to a killed polio vaccine now, but it was a live viral vaccine before, and sometimes these things go, something bad happens, and some, you know, we had two or three, when we were using the live polio vaccine, we had one or two kids who developed polio, actual polio from the vaccine. But again, how many kids have we prevented from having polio with the vaccine? Bad things happen sometimes, but we've got to talk about benefit and risk. I know there's a lot of, we've talked about this earlier, about thiomersal. Thiomersal has been in vaccines, as far as I know, forever. It's been in, I think it's in DPT, it's in everything. It's coming out of some, I think it's out of DPT now. I'm not sure, I'd have to check in that. But what does it do? It's a preservative. All right, it's a mercury-containing preservative. Mercury is a neurotoxin, although it's in very, very tiny amounts in the vaccines. To the best of our scientific knowledge, the thiomersal causes nothing. It does not relate to autism. It does not relate to anything bad. It helps keep the vaccines pure and effective. And, yeah, it's going to disappear in the next X number of years, but we're sometimes stuck with it for now. Again, we have no scientific data that it does anything bad. And, you know, it's been in the vaccines forever. We've seen an upsurge in the diagnosis of autism in the past decade or so. Why didn't we see it two or three decades ago with thiomersal related to it? But again, we've got to talk about benefit risk. How many kids' lives have we saved with the vaccines we've got out there currently? And okay, sometimes, yeah, bad things happen to good people. There's benefits and risk, but I think I still support our vaccine program. They're looking for more, and when more vaccines come out, I'm sure I'll probably support those too.
Well, and as the caller has suggested, you know, there's a big picture public health issue as well.
Yeah.
You know, you can't wipe out polio or smallpox unless you have a population that's inoculated against these things.
And then we've got the immunocompromised, either children or adults who either their immune system's knocked out by therapy or we don't want to give them the vaccine because their immune system is compromised and the vaccine may affect them adversely. So then we want that herd immunity. If nobody around them can get measles, then this child is protected too.
We have a couple callers waiting. Well, let's talk next with a Champagne listener on line number 3. Good morning.
Hi. I've been enjoying the conversation, especially the part about the difficulty in diagnosing children with psychological disorders and mental disorders. And I have a nephew. He's 8 or 9 years old, single mother. She, low income. She even has another child by a different father. And so, but he has been diagnosed with ADHD and now with bipolar disorder.
Okay.
And, you know, just the way you were talking about how do you, the difficulty in diagnosing this, what part of this is, you know, really a psychological disorder and what part is just the fact that this child has had to deal with so many things in his life that maybe, you know, children his age probably shouldn't have to deal with. My question is just, how common is bipolar disorder in diagnosis in children that young? And then my other question is just, how does a pediatrician or a doctor diagnose these things? Is it mostly based solely on the testimony of the parent or what?
Yeah, obviously it's going to be the testimony of the parent and the adults around this child because this child, you know, again, he communicates like an 8-year-old. Bipolar disorder, it's being diagnosed more, and I think there's a lot of debate, you know, does it exist or doesn't exist? But I think, yeah, again, how's the pediatrician going to come up with the... And I think it's not the pediatrician's job to come up with the diagnosis. It's the pediatrician's job to say, uh-oh, this kid is deviating from the norm frequently enough is unhappy, is not doing well in school, whatever, whatever, I'm going to find this child more expert help and refer this child on to a good child psychotherapist. But again, you've told me this mother is a single mother. She lives beneath the poverty area, the poverty zone. Where do I find care for this child?
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Another caller waiting on line number one, Champagne listener. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Hi, yes. Excuse me. A friend of mine's daughter, 13 years old, and was recently diagnosed with shingles.
Okay.
I wondered if you could expound on that a little bit.
Okay. Shingles is chickenpox.
Right.
It's the chickenpox virus. And we live with many, many viruses, usually peacefully. We live with herpes, the one that causes cold sores and the one that can cause genital herpes. We live with... we can live with adenovirus, which causes usually a eye and throat infection. We can live with that peacefully for years, decades. And the herpes zoster virus, the chickenpox virus, likes to live with us. And what it does is it hides in our dorsal nerve roots near the spinal cord. And for some reason, it will reactivate itself. Sometimes we have a good reason. Sometimes this patient is immune suppressed again because of asthma. They're on steroids for asthma or because of chemotherapy or something like that. But more often than not, we don't know why it decides to reactivate itself. And it doesn't reactivate itself as chickenpox. It comes out along the nerve path of the ganglion that it decided to hide in. So usually what happens is we'll get a rash that starts in the middle of our chest and gradually spreads to the back of our chest. It's not very common in kids. It's much more common in older adults, but it does happen in kids. The good news in the pediatric population is it doesn't tend to be recurrent. It doesn't tend to leave any scars on the skin. And it doesn't tend to leave any neuropathy or any pain behind. So it's a localized case, a localized stripe of chickenpox, if you will, that tends to go away over a week's time, like chickenpox does. The only other problem is they are contagious of chickenpox while the shingles is active.
Okay, now she had never had chickenpox.
Oh, yes, she did.
But she had been vaccinated.
Okay. To the best of my, the chickenpox vaccine is a live viral vaccine. She was vaccinated. I can't remember exactly how many years that vaccine is out, but I think she lived a few years without it. And I'll bet you she had chickenpox and it was undiagnosed. And in young children, chickenpox can often be a very, very mild infection where they'll have a couple of lesions. And unless you see characteristic number of lesions in their various stages of formation, from red bumps to blisters to scabs, you won't make the diagnosis. And I'll bet you she had chickenpox and it was undiagnosed.
Okay, how contagious is it at this point?
She is contagious only to people who have not had chickenpox.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, shingles has never been reported as a result of the vaccine.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, it is a live viral vaccine, and I think we're waiting for maybe shingles to come from the vaccine.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Right.
Thanks for the call and good luck. We have just about 2 minutes left, and there are a lot of things we could talk about. Our producer, Harriet Williamson, handed me a note that talks about back-to-school safety, avoiding backpack injury.
Okay.
Apparently, a lot of kids are carrying backpacks full of stuff, more than 15% of their body weight, and this can lead to problems.
Yeah. And I think, again, I read an article about that. It was a long time ago, and I can't remember what it was. Yeah. I think it was more if the backpack is worn inappropriately, over one shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
If it's hooked over two shoulders and it's a well-designed backpack, I think you tend to see, not much problem with it.
Yeah. Well, it looks so much cooler over one shoulder that, you know, well, at least some people think, you know, we talk about, are you a one strapper or a two strapper? That can lead to posture problems and, you know, pinched shoulder nerves and things like that.
Also, I read an article that I think there's far more backpack injuries of kids hitting other kids with backpacks than there are backache injuries from carrying the backpack. Okay. That it may be an overrated problem.
Okay. Well, school is kicking off, so we're heading into a busier time for all concerned. So, well, I'm sure we'll continue talking more about all these issues. And so we'll have to leave it there with a reminder, don't hit each other with backpacks.
Don't hit each other with backpacks. And listen to your children and advocate for your children. If you don't, nobody else probably will either.
There you go. Our guest has been Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a longtime pediatrician. He's been on the show now for, we've been doing this for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. Also a clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, and always with us on the third Thursday of the month from 10 to 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, Dr. Bocek, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
We will take a break. We have coming up in the 11 o'clock hour of the show. Let me just mention that we'll have an archived interview. This will be pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take phone calls during the second hour of the day today. Simon Head is the guest, director of the Project on Technology and the Workplace at the Century Foundation, and author of the book The Ruthless Economy, Work and Power in the Digital Age. He says while computers can be used to add to the skills of workers, too often they are used to control and limit skilled work. Well, we'll hear that interview in just a few minutes. First, we'll take a break for some news and market update.
Support for Focus 580 comes from the Infant Parent Institute. With offices in Champaign, the Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infant-parent.com. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, Champaign's exclusive Subaru dealer on Route 45 in Savoy, online at wardenmartin.com. The phone number is 217-352-8910 for Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey. Soybeans continue its choppy way this morning. The market fractionally mixed. Seems like traders are waiting for weekend weather developments. The DTN man on the floor, Garrett Wilhelmy, is saying that forecasts are calling for 1 to 1.5 inches of rain over parts of Illinois through the weekend. Of course, soybean traders, particularly the large specs, moved to mostly neutral futures position. And maybe not much activity will continue throughout the remainder of the day. Let's go ahead, though, and look at the current tick. And